Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Talk some Dallas Cowboys, who came this close to making the playoffs. Despite a disappointing season, the team still believes they've got their franchise quarterback in Dak Prescott. Stephen Jones says that signing Dak is urgent and is the team's number one priority, even though I feel like I heard that last season. Nick, do the Cowboys have to make Dak the highest paid player in the NFL?
The highest paid player in the NFL?
Highest paid player in the NFL?
I thought you were going to say on their team. And I was like, well, DeMarcus Lawrence makes a lot, but probably. In the NFL.
Realistically, you know that's the conversation that's going to be had.
No, they don't have to. You mentioned that this was the conversation, you know, almost a year ago. I will look into the cameras. I did 9 months ago, and I will say it again. And I have no loyalty to the Dallas Cowboys. I like a bunch of the retired Dallas Cowboys. I like Troy. I like a lot of the guys we work with. But the current team, they're one of 32. Dallas, you do not have to do this. No matter what the media narrative is, you actually still hold the cards. Dak has made no long-term money in his career. People say, oh, he makes all this money in endorsements. He does not make the type of money in endorsements that can come close to what the NFL contract offer is going to be. The generational, I could do anything I wanted and still, as long as I don't, you know, try to start an airline or something crazy, I can still, you know, die with a bunch of money left over. That generations that I will never meet will be spending my money. You can do that for Dak without making him one of the three highest paid players in the league. And if he says no to that, if he says, even though I'm the 11th best quarterback in football, I should be the highest or second highest paid quarterback in football, then test his water again. He played this whole year under the specter of injury with no guaranteed money. See if he wants to run that back a second time with the only guaranteed money being a franchise tag. I would put him to the test, Canty. Now, I hate the franchise tag on principle, but it's there. As long as it's there, this is what it's there for. I think they will be making a massive, grievous error if he starts making Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers money, much less Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson money, who are the next two guys up as well.
Well, the problem you run into if you tag him is you run out of cap space and you're trying to sign Amari Cooper and you hope you don't lose Byron Jones in free agency. If you put the franchise tag on him and he doesn't sign it, well, who's going to be your quarterback going into the 2020 season? So I think Dak does have a degree of leverage as far as these negotiations go. But what makes it interesting is the Dallas Cowboys knew that the longer that they waited, it was going to cost them more money. When you got Carson Wentz's deal done, when you got Jared Goff's deal done, you know Dak Prescott is looking at those same guys because they're in his draft class. And oh, by the way, those guys were first-round draft picks, so they had a lot more financial security coming into the NFL than he did. So when you look at what he's done based on where he was drafted, clearly he had outperformed his contract. And so to me, if Dallas recognized that he was going to be their quarterback for the foreseeable future, they should have got this deal done sooner rather than later. And now, as a result of waiting, it's going to cost you a lot more money.
Did Dak become more valuable after the season he had, or are you at the same place?
Well,
because he played well, but the team, obviously.
The argument for Dak before this year was even if the numbers aren't great, he wins. And the argument this year was, even though they didn't win, his numbers were great. So to me, it's about a push. Like,
okay.
he didn't lose ground, but I don't think he gained a ton of ground. And I just one other thing for the Dak fans out there, the people that want Dak to that want the Cowboys to pay Dak this type of money. I am not arguing that Dak Prescott is a bad quarterback. But you can, and you can say, oh, what are you going to do if you don't have a quarterback? If you tell me you've got to have a car, and you cut, and you say, listen, hey, I got one. I got a brand new Acura. I'm like, oh, that's a pretty good car. That's awesome. And then you tell me you paid $175,000 for it, then I'm going to say, well, that was a terrible decision. You'd be better off walking. And so that's the position that you are in. You cannot pay, as Chris Canty knows, Bentley prices for a nice mid-size luxury sedan.
You have a sedan?
No, he's got a Bentley. And so you can't do that. And if you do, you are going to regret it at some point.
It's a great analogy.
Even if to your point, they can screw with the cap this year to where it's a cheap cost this year, that bill eventually becomes due. So I would just caution you against it. TurboTax is here to help this tax season by making tax filing easier for you. They've made it their mission to give you all the tools and advice you need to get your taxes done with confidence, like making uploading your W-2 as easy as taking a picture. Just use your phone or tablet to simply snap a picture of your W-2, then watch your information appear in the right place in your tax return. You can be sure you're filing your taxes correctly while at the same time making sure you're getting the best possible refund. TurboTax, all people are tax people.
Back here, first things first, we're now joined by three-time Super Bowl champ, voted funniest guest we've ever had.
What up?
Former NFL coach, Eric Mangini. Hey, Coach.
Hi,
nice
good
to
morning.
See you.
Hey, Coach, can I ask you a favor?
Sure.
And I know this is not really in your comfort zone, but I know you're working on personal growth and evolution. Will you bring at least one of your Super Bowl rings to Miami?
Oh.
Yeah, I probably won't.
Okay.
I don't know how that associates with growth, but if you look at this tie.
Yes, the tie is showing immense growth.
Yeah. And so I was
here's mindset. How you could do it. A chain so Nick feels more comfortable, and then just stick it on the chain.
Oh, now that would be dope.
That is more in your wheelhouse.
And I wear the rings.
I haven't
on
heard
my
a
chain.
Lot of people say dope in a while either. That's a little bit of a thriller.
Will you at least take dope. A picture of them so we can see them?
Do you have rings, Coach?
I think I do. They're
okay.
somewhere.
Just making sure, because I've been saying that you do.
Okay.
So I just
want
to make sure.
I tried, America.
And my goal is to be dope.
all right, Coach. Speaking of coaches, Kyle Shanahan is making his Super Bowl debut as a head coach. Last time he coached in the Super Bowl, it was 3 years ago. It was Super Bowl 51, and he was the offensive coordinator of the Falcons. When the Falcons blew a 28-3 lead to the Patriots. He then went home empty-handed. Even though a few seasons have passed, Shanahan remembers the lessons he learned in that game.
There's definitely parts in that Super Bowl that I would love to have back and stuff I was very hard on myself, but you know, the whole narrative of if I just would have ran it, we would have won. I know that wasn't the case. I know what went into that game and all the stuff that happened. So that stuff didn't bother me. I won't say that I ever relaxed in that Super Bowl, especially with Tom Brady having that ball. But that's something that keeps you humble at every single moment until the game's over.
Coach, what do you think Shanahan can learn from what happened in that game that he can take into this Super Bowl matchup against the Chiefs?
Well, you see what he learned even this past game, where every inclination of an offensive coordinator who is also the head coach, when you've got a quarterback like Jimmy Garoppolo in an offense like he has, is to throw the ball more.
But he was stuck with that run.
He was, yeah, it was going well. He was limited to 8 passes, which is an incredible number. To me, that's a direct reflection of what he learned. And you go through a lot of lessons in life, but in the NFL, and when you go through a lesson that's as painful as the one that he went through, you're going to have a plan in place. And in his defense, there was a head coach who could have trumped him at any point on any of those different drives.
Correct.
And now he is the head coach, so I'm sure he's going through that situation. Ideally, you're in that situation, being up as much as they were, but he's going to cover that with his coordinators, maybe in a way that he wished it had been covered when he was in the same spot.
Well, the other, and I understand Shanahan's point, and I'm not trying to relitigate Super Bowl 51, but that we couldn't just run it every single time. That's kind of true. What's also true is, run it or not, they were not taking the play clock down within 5 seconds, as when you have that type of lead, especially late in the game as the lead's dwindling, but you still have a lead, you absolutely have to do. And what was the most critical of all the errors was what they did, or more accurately, what they didn't do after Julio Jones made the catch that should have iced the game. That catch, we thought it was one of the greatest catches. It was right there alongside the Mario Manningham catch in this Super Bowl you won, where it's like, oh my God, how did he make that throw and that catch? Well, now they are going to win. They're at the 22-yard line, up 8 points inside of 4 minutes. If you just were to, and I know you can't, you wouldn't, just take knees in that spot. If you trust your field goal kicker, the game's over. Instead, they put themselves in a position where they took sacks, where they stopped the clock, and that's why the Patriots were able to come back. But I do think you learn from that. I think it's unfortunate that he had to learn from it in that painful of a fashion. But to Coach's point, I think he has shown that type of growth as far as style. And this is something you guys did so well in New England, that you did well in your coaching stops. Style points are fake. It is not about how you win the game. It is about, did you win the game? And there comes a point in a game, and the Niners, I'm certain, their best game plan and their hope is that this happens in the Super Bowl, where your opponent is no longer your opponent, where your opponent is the clock. And once that happens, your game plan has to go out the window, and you start playing against the clock, especially since they changed the onside kick rules to where if it becomes an onside kick game, you've essentially lost, which is different than even during that Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So that's, I think Shanahan has learned, even if he's doing a little revisionist history as far as what happened in that Super Bowl, and I think we have seen it in these playoffs so far.
Yeah, when you find yourself on the wrong side of Super Bowl history, you're going to remember the lessons that come out of that experience, and I think that last week's game against the Packers is an example of Kyle Shanahan growing as a play caller, because I haven't met an offensive coordinator that doesn't want to throw the ball all around the yard. But the fact that he was able to stay with the run to the tune of racking up nearly 300 yards rushing and only allowing your quarterback to throw the ball 8 times, I think that that's significant growth, but that's also recognizing the strengths of your team and playing to them. If you look at Super Bowl 51, when they played the Patriots, they had success running the football in the first half. So you would think, if something's working, let's stay with it and force them to stop it. When they force them to stop it, when they stop it, then we'll come up with another way to be able to try to have productivity on the offensive side of the ball. But you make them stop what you do well first, and if they never do it, well, that's to your advantage. So I think that that's a big thing that he can take out of it. But I also wonder how Kyle Shanahan will do on this stage in terms of overall game management, because it's different when you think about it from a play calling standpoint as opposed to managing the game, feeling the heartbeat of the game, and making decisions in real time, recognizing the pressure and the magnitude of the moment. So that's something to watch for. Now he's got a great resource in his family tree. His dad has been on that stage multiple times, so I'm sure he can lean on him from that. But I'd be interested to see how he handles that, because the Super Bowl is not just any other game. And if you try to sell that to your team or to yourself, you're only doing yourself a disservice.
When you look at decisions, oftentimes we're so results oriented, and I get that, but you also have to look at the process to how you got to those results, and was that flawed, you know, as you move forward, and they weren't running the ball very well in the second half, and I think there was this mentality with that offense. They were the, I believe, the best offense in the league that year.
One of the 8 highest scoring offenses in league history.
In league history, so there was that mindset of, we're going to go win this game, as opposed to, we're not going to lose this game. And when you look back at things, people will criticize, hey, you weren't conservative enough. But if you get too conservative,
yes,
then people criticize you the other way and say, you were one of the 8th best offenses ever in NFL history, but yet you went into a shell. So I don't think it's completely fair to just retroactively look at this and say, you know, it's all his fault.
Listen, you're totally right. And I could see it already percolating with the Chiefs game plan, with what the Chiefs did in the second half against the Titans. When they were, once they got up 11, and they started just running the football, if Patrick doesn't complete that 3rd and 6 bomb to Sammy Watkins, put the game away, if that goes incomplete, and now all of a sudden it's like, wait, you guys were just annihilating them through the air, then you start running, it would have been old. Andy Reid's, you know,
exactly
100%.
When I was watching the game, that's exactly what it felt like, where it was headed.
That it was headed there, and so I totally understand. I think it's a really good point. The point I'm making is, for that specific game, when you say, let's go win it, They won it when Julio caught that pass. Mm-hmm. When you're at the 22-yard line inside of 4 minutes, up eight. Unless your field goal kicker has torn his hamstring and you can't, you're indoors with a chance to go up 11 and make sure the other team has no timeouts left. That what the aggressive play was to Julio, and you won the game there, and they kept their foot on the gas. They're calling two more pass plays on that drive, knocked him out of field goal range. That's the part that it does appear Shanahan certainly has learned from.
And Shanahan's about to play a team who erased a 24-point deficit themselves in the Chiefs against the Texans, so they know what that's like on the other side.
Why not, Jenna? Let's do it.
Here we go. Once again, the Cowboys are negotiating against themselves. Stephen Jones said that Dak Prescott's deal is the team's number one priority. Candy, you went around on the Cowboys still being able to compete for a Super Bowl if they make Dak the highest paid player in the NFL.
Jenna, I'm out. And it's not because I don't believe that you can win with a quarterback like Dak Prescott, because I think he can. But you have to have all the other areas of your team above average. And if you're paying a quarterback $33, $34, $35 million, you're going to lose some other pieces. So the Cowboys won't be as talented as they were this past year. So I'm out on them making Dak Prescott the highest paid player in the league.
Look, the market is what the market is, so if they want to keep him around, they're going to have to pay him, and they're going to have to pay him based off of what other people like him make. So I'm in on this, and the one thing I like about Dak is everything I've heard about his character, his work ethic, and his ability to continue to get better. So let's see what he does in a new offensive system. If you want him around, you got to pay him.
I agree that if they want to keep him around, they're going to have to pay him a ton of money. You have a franchise tag or long-term extension. But I'm out, because I think if you do that, you are not going to have the pieces that he needs around him to compete for a championship. I think Dak is in that same tier as Jimmy Garoppolo. You can say, oh, Jimmy Garoppolo's competing for a championship. Yeah, he is. The big balloon cap hits of his payment of his contract were last year and coming up in the future. This year it's in a bit of a valley, if you will. And they've got so much talent that is still on cheap deals. Nicky Bosa's a superstar. He's on a rookie deal. George Kittle is a superstar. He's on a rookie late round pick deal. The Cowboys don't have those benefits. They've paid everybody already, so they're going to have to pare away guys from their roster. So I'm out on their ability to win a Super Bowl, compete for a Super Bowl if they pay Dak.
All right, yesterday, Patriots owner Robert Kraft told TMZ, quote, "We plan to keep Brady in New England." However, Tom Brady said he's going to be open-minded when he's a free agent. Canty, you in or out on Brady returning to the Pats next season?
Yeah, I'm in on Tom Brady coming back. The Patriots don't have an alternative, and I don't think that Tom Brady really wants to go anywhere else to play. I think that this is posturing. He wants to be respected by the organization, and players feel respect by the way you pay him. He's been at a below-market deal for the last several years. I think he wants to get paid and be recognized as one of the best quarterbacks in the game.
I get advice when I became a head coach, said, look, when you go home at night, you got to be happy. And if your assistant coaches are unhappy, tell them to go get their own head coaching job. And he said, now on the flip side, the owner needs to be happy. And if you don't like that, go buy your own team. And so when you hear the owner say that he wants him around, then I think he's going to be around, because at the end of the day, if you don't like it, go buy your own team.
Yeah.
Great point, coach.
I don't think Belichick buy his own team, but Belichick might find a new team if this gets meddled with again. I think Belichick's made his feelings clear on this when he didn't give Brady an extension 8 months ago. I'm out. I am not convinced Brady wants to be back. I think Brady might have said I've taken less for you, for what? I've done more than any player for any organization in the history of the league, and you treat me with this level of disrespect, not, you know, making me sing for my supper, and then not even giving me my supper when it came to the contract extension. So I think Brady is going to see if the grass is greener and decide it is. I'm out.
All right, the 49ers defense has been one of the best units in the NFL all season. They'll face a really tough test in Super Bowl 54 against the explosive Chiefs offense. Candy, you in or out on the 49ers being the team best equipped to slow down Kansas City?
Jenna, I am in, and it has everything to do with the defensive line for the 49ers. They've got four players this year that had 6.5 sacks or more. That's the best in the NFL. They have depth on that defensive front, so they can roll those pass rushers so they stay fresh throughout the game. If you're going to slow down the Chiefs, you have to cut the head off the snake. You got to hit Pat Mahomes. The 49ers defense can do that.
You know, if looking at the whole league, I would have chosen New England, and then they held them to 23 points during the course of the season. I know they got out early to a lead, but then they were able to shut them down. And I think as each time that they play an opponent, it gets a little bit better and it gets a little bit harder for that quarterback. So I would have taken that.
Yeah, and I in the Super Bowl, I would understand that as well because you have that extra time to prepare, throw in some defense Belichick saw in 1983 that nobody has seen since.
Oh, he probably ran.
Right. And yeah. So I understand that, but I am going to go with Canty and the horses of the Niners. I don't think there is a coverage you can play against a healthy Patrick Mahomes that can effectively slow him down. No, if there is, no one's done it yet. But you can anyone can be slowed down with a violent pass rush, with a ferocious pass rush. That's what the Niners have better than New England, so that's why I'm in.
Will they keep him in the pocket?
Well, right. Nobody's been able to yet.
Will they keep him in the pocket?
Finally tonight, get ready for it, 9:30, Pelicans hosting the Spurs, the much-anticipated but appropriately hyped NBA debut of number one overall pick Zion Williamson. During the preseason, he averaged 23 points per game. However, lately, he's been going viral for dozing off.
I don't know that he's sleeping.
Is he meditating?
I don't know that he's sleeping.
Well, anyway, when asked about it, here's what he had to say.
This has been very difficult. If y'all saw me meditating on the sidelines during the games, it's been very difficult, but it's finally here. I finally get to go back out there.
Yeah. That was appropriately predicted. I thought he was meditating. You know, yeah. I recognize
he wasn't sleeping. People need to stop with
meditates.
You're talking about me lying about you, Kenny. People need to stop lying about Zion Williamson. He wasn't sleeping on the bench. I don't know exactly what he was doing, but he wasn't sleeping.
He was resting his eyes.
Yeah,
hey,
whatever.
If anyone's taking a 1 p.m. Uh-huh. college course, you know what it's like in the middle of the day where it's like two anvils yeah. sitting on your eyelids.
What he
sometimes.
Was trying to do, Jenna, was visualize himself in the actual game.
And that's going to happen
the power,
tonight.
The
that's
power
what I should have
visualization.
Said. That is big. Good call, Kenny.
That
absolutely
is
going
to happen tonight. What do you expect out of Zion this evening?
Well, this evening, it looks like he might be on a bit of minutes restriction, so I don't think we're going to get the full Zion experience. But I want to plant my flag on this right now. I think Zion's going to help lead the Pelicans to the playoffs. I think that a team that we thought could be a plucky, interesting 7 or 8 seed before the year when we thought he was going to be able to play the full season, and then once you heard he was out and you saw them get out to the start, they did and said, oh, it's going to be a lost season. Well, that... There are 7 quality teams out west. There are 5 excellent teams. Dallas is a good 6th team. Oklahoma City is a pretty good 7th team. And then it's a bunch of, wait, what? Fighting for that 8th spot. So the Pelicans are not out of it. Zion, I believe, is going to average 20 points a game this year, Canty. I don't think he can win the Rookie of the Year because Ja's been so sensational. He's played all year and good for Ja, who would have been the number one pick in a lot of other drafts. But I think we're going to get to see LeBron, Zion, round one of the Western Conference playoffs, and that'll end in a sweep for them if that ends up being the matchup, but it'll still be great experience, and I think people have gotten too down on Zion. Now, the conversation is, will Ja be a better pro? Should Ja be the number one pick? This guy was one of the most dominant, once in a generation athletes we've ever seen at the collegiate level. We have such a short memory because he's been hurt, we haven't seen it. We'll be reminded of that instantly, no matter how many minutes he plays tonight, Canty, because even amongst the NBA, he's a one of one athletically, as far as size, leaping ability, all of it.
Yeah, this is the most anticipated rookie debut since 17 years ago when LBJ came into the league. Yep. And you likened him to that in terms of the physical ability. Yes, yep. Just the gifts that he has and just the comparables. But looking at his profile as a collegiate player, everything that we saw at Duke would suggest that he's going to be able to come in and have instant success. And what I like about the situation he's in is he's going to a basketball team where David Griffin is the executive, somebody that was responsible for adding LeBron James to the Cleveland Cavaliers and then building out a roster around him. I think it's important to have somebody with that type of experience because they recognize what's important in terms of being able to realize the full potential of Zion, making sure that you have the pieces in place. And there's a lot to like with what the Pelicans did this offseason with the trade that they made with the Lakers. They added Lonzo Ball. They added Brandon Ingram, who's playing at an all-star level. Don't forget they got a knockdown shooter in J.J. Redick. And then they got Jackson Hayes, who's a big guy that can protect the paint, be a rim defender. So I just feel like all of the pieces that the Pelicans have in place are going to complement what Zion does well, and they're going to give him every opportunity to put his stamp on this Pelicans team. I think that's why they've been waiting for so long, trying to be cautious, because they want to make sure that he's right, and then they want to see whether this team is capable of making a playoff push.
So on one hand, they did do all that. They did wait probably longer than some
expected.
Had predicted when he had the surgery. They waited a long time. He
seems ready. He seems focused. He seems to want to get out there. But at the same time, this is a team that is very well planning to make a playoff push. You worry you're putting too much pressure on this kid?
No.
Not only do we want you, but we need you because we need to make up some ground in the West.
Well, no, because I don't think there's a lot of people predicting what I just did. That the Pelicans are going to go from where they are right now, I think 12th in the Western Conference, to the 8th seed. But it's only 3 games back.
Yep.
And because he's only playing half the season, and it's not like they're playing anything close to even 500 basketball right now, you're not going to say he derailed anything. And he is a special, physical specimen and a special athlete. And as far as scoring 20 a game, I think people feel like, well, that's a lot to ask. He is going to get 12 to 14 points a game outside of the structure of your offense. He will get 12 to 14 a game off putbacks and transition every night. So you only need 6 to 8 a night inside the offense. You know what I mean? In the half court offense, while he learns at least a competent or more competent jump shot, while he learns NBA offenses, he will still be in the teens without getting one basket there. And where most rookies, not all rookies, not the kid Matthias Thybulle from Philly and a couple others, most rookies are terrible defensive players. Zion, I believe Kanti will instantly be an above average defender because of his athleticism, his ability to get to the weak side, blocking, contest shots. That will translate immediately as well, which also will help the Pelicans.
Yeah, I saw him make a play last year in college where there was a three-point shot by a guy at Virginia, and he was able to get from the paint, close out on the shooter, and actually block the shot. So, I mean, what he can do on the defensive end, I think, is being understated in terms of his overall game. But Zion will be an impact player. There is no question about it. The only question was, coming out, there would be some concerns about durability, ability to be able to stay healthy, because he had a little bit of an injury at the end of the regular season at Duke, and then he had the injury with the meniscus in summer league. So I just think we haven't seen a guy this big, this explosive, and so people didn't know whether or not he'd be able to stay healthy. But if he stays healthy, there's no question in my mind he can average 20 points a game.
If he stays healthy, his floor is Blake Griffin. And Blake Griffin, by the way, is going to make the Hall of Fame one day. And his ceiling is a couple MVPs. That's the spectrum of a healthy Zion Williamson career. Starts tonight. I cannot wait.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.